my story is a little bit reverse. I'm the one that got diagnosed. And then as I'm sharing with him, oh my gosh, you know how I always do this? That's ADHD. So one day he's like, Mom, I think I might have ADHD because a lot of these things you're saying make so much sense. So now I realize some of those times where he was needing me to sit down with him doing his homework, that was body doubling. And likewise, having him around the house was kind of like body doubling for me. So with him going away, that structure is not there.
Hello and welcome to the Women and ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Katie Weber. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 45, and it completely turned my world upside down. I've been looking back at so much of my life, school, jobs, my relationships, all of it with this new lens, and it has been nothing short of overwhelming. I quickly discovered I was not the only woman to have this experience, and now I interview other women who, like me, discovered in adulthood they have ADHD and are finally feeling like they understand who they are and how to best lean into their strengths, both professionally and personally. Well, hello there. Here we are at episode 185, in which I interview Clara Harris. Clara lives in Louisville, Kentucky, and she is an actor, writer, and producer with over two decades of experience. In 2022, she produced and performed her solo show at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, the world's largest performing arts festival. The show is called This Moment in America, a live-recorded audio drama and sonic collage of the American psyche. When Clara returned home from this incredible experience, she found she had an empty business account and really struggled to reintegrate into life and find what she calls a jobby job. And suddenly she felt like a failure. Her longtime therapist suggested she look into ADHD, and that's when the light bulb went off. Clara wanted to share her diagnosis story here because she knows firsthand how lonely this journey can feel, especially as a late diagnosed woman. We talk about the potpourri of diagnoses that Clara received prior to her ADHD diagnosis, as well as her journey to finding the right medication. We also talk about some of the ways in which anxiety impacts our daily life and the elaborate systems we develop in order to cope. And Clara shares the exciting news about her upcoming studies at University College London, pursuing her master's in audio storytelling. Clara is also the creative force behind Swamp Witch Studio and its audio drama podcast Night Owl Theater, which offers live chamber performances in homes and other non-traditional spaces. Speaking with Clara was such a joy and a reminder of how awesome it is to interview other ADHD women and feel like we're long-lost best friends reuniting and bearing our souls. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
Well, hello, Clara. How are you?
Hello. I am doing well. Running a little bit behind schedule for what I had planned. So I've got wet hair here, but it'll dry. You'll see it get bigger as we go through the our chat today.
I was going to say, from one curly-haired person to another, I know that feeling of having wet hair all day long. And then finally it's dry and you're like, okay, time for bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me. I was very excited to, you know, it's weird because, you know, your name is also like notorious now, right?
Yes.
I didn't know that until I Googled you and was like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah. Not that Clara Harris. So for those who have not yet Googled the name, I'll save you the, you may want to do it anyway. This is the lady you may recall several years ago, it's been many years ago at this point, killed her husband. She was in the car with, I think it was with his daughter from another woman. Anyway, she ran over him, backed up, and she was in jail in Texas for a little while. And
she was a dentist and he was an orthodontist, right?
Yeah, I knew it was something to do with dentistry profession. I didn't remember all of the details other than they did a made for TV movie about her starring Cela Ward. So even if you were to Google Clara Harris actor, I still don't show up sometimes on the first page of Google. So like my own name, I can't get decent SEO on. So yeah, it's been an interesting name to have. I have considered changing my last name because it's my married name and I married into Harris, which is a much more common name than what my maiden name was. And so I've often thought about changing my name, but the options I've Googled, there are already people. I've got all the social media property with just Clara Harris. And so I was just, not the word just, at Clara Harris. It's like, oh man.
It's a great name though. I wouldn't change it. It has a really nice bounce to it. You know, it has a nice cadence to it. That's totally what happened to me when I got married. I changed my name too, because my last name, or my name before I got married, was Sternberg, which was very, I was, you know, the only one out there. And so it was very unique. But I was young, and so I didn't have much of a career yet. And mm-hmm. I just thought Katie Webber sounded so cute. I was like, Katie Webber. It was so bouncy. And I just, you know, impulsively changed my name and was like, yeah, you know, why not? But like, I've had that moment of like, my, you know, feminist sisters must be so disappointed in me that I changed my name to my husband's name. But I'm like, yes. if the opposite was true, if my name was Weber and I met a Sternberg, I would never in a million years change my name. But I was like, it's so cute. And I'm like, that's one of those things that I look back and I was like, I didn't put literally any thought into it. I was just like, I like the way it sounds. And here we are. And so then I have those moments of panic where I'm like, God, what happens if we get divorced? Am I going to have to go back to It's just so silly, but I always feel like I need to apologize for changing my name, because I'm like, my feminist sisters are so disappointed in me, but look how cute it is. So I'm like, Clara Harris has that same kind of like bounciness to it.
Yeah, even if the SEO isn't great. By the way, there's also a Clara Harris who was in the same box as Lincoln when he was shot. Yay.
Wow.
I didn't know it. I should have checked. Like, I should have Googled. Well, the Clara Harris in Texas didn't kill her husband until after I was going by Clara Harris. But I could have at least Googled the other lady. So she was an actor too.
Oh my God, what an awesome fact. What a nice little fact to throw out at parties. Yeah, I always say that with my son. So we named my son Max. And so his name is Max Weber, who is a very, you know, the very famous philosopher. But his name was Max Weber. And so people always like to be like, did you know your son's name is a famous philosopher? We're like, yes, we know. But we always joke about the fact that the rest of us, our last name is pronounced Weber, but his last name is pronounced Weber.
Not to Americanize, unfortunately.
I know. But
my first name is Jennifer. So I, when I got married into Jennifer Harris, there was already a Jennifer Harris in the union, the Actors Union. You can't have more than one active member with per name.
Really?
Which is why you end up with things like Michael J. Fox. Oh. I understand. Again, I mean, you know, you read it on the internet, who knows if it's true, but I understand that part of the reason he has the J in his name is because of there being another Michael Fox.
That's so interesting. I always thought it was for Google ability and uniqueness. I didn't realize there was like a hard, fast rule in the union. That's weird.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, surprise, surprise. Jennifer is so common, especially in my demographic, my age bracket. And Harris is such a common last name. There was already a Jennifer Harris. And I had already gone by my middle name some in college, but just kind of switched over to it professionally. So all of this to say, I have scars from growing up as a Jennifer in the 80s with a bajillion other Jennifers. I was always like one of five in a class. So when we had our son, I was adamant that he was not going to have a common name. Also, I have two older sisters who had an Emma, not knowing every other person in the hospital was naming their kid Emma that year also. And an Ethan, the other sister has an Ethan, again, not realizing how popular the name was. And they said the same thing my parents did. We didn't know any Ethans, Emmas, Jennifers growing up. How is it all of a sudden? So I was like, no, we are not doing this. So I found out on the Social Security website, there's a baby name popularity ranking. And so you can go on and search how popular certain names were in certain years. And so I was like, it can't be in the top 100 names. Like, it has to be outside of the top 100 names from the past couple of years. And I literally just would Google things that we were thinking about. And it had to be like really high numbers. Flynn was off the charts. Flynn is my son's name. Not named after Flynn Rider. The movie came out after.
I was going to say that you were foiled after that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we have some friends who gave birth the year Frozen came out. Basically, the kid was born as the release was happening, and they had already decided on Elsa as a name.
Oh.
And they had friends come to see them, and they were like, oh, I'm sorry to tell you this, but do you know what the name of the Frozen character is? And they were like, no! So yeah, so Flynn Rider, Tangled came out, and Flynn Rider became in it. So now we get asked one of two questions usually, you know, what's your name? What's your kid's name? Flynn. Huh. Is that a family name? No. And yeah, in fact, I named my kid Flynn before Orlando Bloom named his kid Flynn. And then the other one is, oh, after Flynn Rider. It's like, no, he's older than Tangled. But we have been so successful. There have been no Flynns in any of his schools. There have been some Finns, but no Flynns until next year. Next year, a junior is coming into his school named Flynn. And we both, when we saw that on the press release, we were like, no. So, yeah. So we're not sure how we feel about this kid yet. I'm sure he's a wonderful person.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, we are actually recording an ADHD podcast at the moment.
Baby naming.
I know. I'm like, I have so much more to say about this because we were so intentional about like naming my, you know, my name, K-A-T-Y. I've been called Kathy my whole life, or it's been spelled I-E. And so I just wanted kids whose names were easy to spell and they didn't have that issue. And so my daughter was Anna, who is, and it's A-N-N-A. It's nice. It's a palindrome. It's an awesome name. But like people always spell it with one N. I mean, not always, but enough that I'm like, you really just can't win. Like, it doesn't matter what you try to avoid. It will find you.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So let's get back to ADHD, shall we? So you were diagnosed 2 years ago?
Yes. I had to do some math. It's like, wait, what year was it that I was diagnosed? What year is it now?
I feel like we're the same age, right? Are you turning 50 and are you 74 or 75?
No, I'm not 74.
No, 1970.
Oh, you mean my birth year. I am an early 75.
Okay.
So, all right. You must be a late 74.
I'm a late 74. Yeah. So, okay. All right. I was like, we have a lot of parallels in terms of ages and kids' ages and stuff. So why don't you tell me about your diagnosis and kind of you were working on a big project in Scotland, right? You had just finished and...
I was getting ready to take a big project to Scotland.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Why don't you tell me and I will shut my mouth, but you tell me what was going on and kind of what were some of those things, those moments where you were like, I should really look into this.
Well, it all starts several years ago when I realized I was constantly having to ask people to repeat themselves, especially my kid and my husband. Wait, what? Huh? What? What'd you say? Huh? Can you repeat that? To the point that I noticed it was becoming a problem. And so, especially being someone who does audio work and some audio editing as well. So just for some quick background, I'm an actor, writer, audio producer type. And so the thought of losing my hearing was a little alarming to cope with. So I truly thought it was an audio issue. So I go to an audiologist and have my hearing checked. Afterwards, she was like, no, it's fine. Your hearing is perfectly fine. Whew. And she's like, I mean, you might have ADHD and you probably didn't make good grades in school and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, ADHD? Nah, that's not me. And I made very good grades in school. I don't know what you're talking about. Got very defensive about it too. So because she immediately sort of jumped to that stereotype. So I just waved it off. I'm like, whatever, my hearing's fine. That's great. And fast forward to 2022, a couple of things happened. That spring, I've been in therapy for many years. I have an alphabet soup of mental health diagnoses, but my therapist, I was relaying to her a drive into school. I was dropping my kid off at school and how the 10 or 15 minutes from our house to the exit ramp, I realized as I got off the exit ramp, my ears were ringing. My kid's asleep next to me. I don't think I even had, no, I didn't have the radio on. And it was because there had been so many thoughts swirling in my head. It was just so noisy. And when the car kind of came to a stop at the end of the exit ramp, my ears were ringing and I was, you know, trying to cope with all of these thoughts swirling around all of the time. And she paused and said, maybe we should test you for ADHD. I'm like, wait, what? So we did the survey. She did the testing there. I don't know if it was that session or the next one, whatever, but that's how I officially got diagnosed. But she is a psychologist, not a psychiatrist. So she cannot prescribe any medication. What she can do is continue to help me with skill building in terms of dealing with these things now, sort of having that frame of ADHD, which is really helpful. But in terms of getting any sort of medication treatment for it, that really started because I was working on taking a show to the Edinburgh Fringe, which is the biggest performing arts festival in the world. It's something that, especially as a lifelong theater kid, the thought of taking a show to the Fringe was certainly something on my bucket list. Very well regarded, and a lot of popular shows have started at the Fringe. Six, which is on Broadway right now and touring. Fleabag from Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Now I'm like, did I get that name right? Anyway,
yep.
But Fleabag that was on Amazon started from a solo show that she did at the Fringe. So, you know, it's launched a lot of different careers, a lot of different shows. And I didn't realize it's also known as a really big comedy stepping stone. So I got there and there were so many comedians and so many stand-up comedy shows that were, especially because in 22, we're still coming out of the pandemic and people were really looking for a good laugh. And my show was not a good laugh. It was a little more serious. So there are laughs, there's levity in it, but it's not a comedy. And so anyway, I was working on this show and really struggling to get through some of the grind of putting the show together. And so in talking with my therapist, we were like, let's give medication a try, and found a psychiatrist who was able to get me on a Adderall dosage. And we started playing around with that. That helped bridge the gap to get me over the hump in terms of task initiation and prioritization and some of those issues that we deal with in terms of executive dysfunction. I was able to kind of manage those to get the task done and get the show up and get it to the Fringe. But since getting back from the Fringe, it's been a little bit of a journey to figure out what that medication needs to be, what the dosage needs to be. So I'm still trying to figure out what is the best solution for me and my particular presentation of ADHD and my particular mixture of chemicals in my own body, what's going to work best in terms of medication management. But that's where I am today, is basically learning how to work with my brain and then seeing what kind of medications can be helpful as I'm looking to work more in tune with my brain as opposed to against it.
Yeah, I feel like that's where we all are. I'm like, if somebody's like, I have completely figured out how to master my ADHD brain, that's where I'm like, I give them side eye, where I'm like, what?
If you have ADHD, it can often feel overwhelming to find the right treatment. And then when you finally do get an appointment with your local clinician, there's no guarantee that they will have the adequate background or understanding of ADHD in adults, especially in women. You might end up leaving that appointment more confused and disheartened than when you entered. That's where Done comes in. Done is an online ADHD care platform that can get you all the resources you need to help manage your ADHD. With experienced clinicians who know exactly what to look for, you can start getting personalized care as soon as today or tomorrow. Take a free one-minute assessment and book an appointment with a licensed ADHD clinician as soon as the next day. Get continuous care, one-click refills, insurance coverage, and 24/7 care team support with Done for just $79 a month and pharmacy copays as low as $0. Visit get.donefirst.com/podcast to learn more. Again, that's get.donefirst.com/podcast. Done. Turn ADHD into your strength.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So let's backtrack a little bit. First of all, the hearing thing and the audio processing disorder, I think, is really interesting, because it's certainly, you know, I've tried to explain it since my diagnosis, where I'm like, thoughts have a couple of rooms they have to move through from my ear to my brain. I'm like, there's a foyer where the words go into the foyer, and it takes a moment before they get in sometimes, if I'm thinking about other things.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I've tried to describe that, where it's like, you know, because there's times where somebody will be speaking to me and I'll say, what? And then as they're repeating it, I I'm answering them. And
yes, I identify with that. Yes.
Right. I've seen that before with other memes. That idea of like, oh yeah, no, it's just like, it just takes longer. I have always been of the theory that all comedians have ADHD. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Probably, yeah.
Right? I just think it's the perfect combination of like self-flagellation, low self-esteem and self-worth, high intelligence, using humor to cope. Like everything about being a comedian just screams ADHD for me. So in terms of medication, what have you tried?
Just Adderall, the short acting version, which is what the first person put me on. And that worked, like I said, to get me really over the hump of getting to Fringe, getting through Fringe. So the Fringe itself is 28 days in Edinburgh, and the whole city is the festival, essentially. There's the Edinburgh International Festival, which is really well respected. You have to be invited to perform. And then the Fringe is arose in the 40s, post-war era, where there were a bunch of artists who were really frustrated that they couldn't get seen on this international platform of the Edinburgh Festival. And so they just started doing shows around the festival in Edinburgh, around the fringe of the festival, which is where the fringe movement essentially started. So the whole city is converted to, you know, festival town, essentially, during the month of August, because you also have the book festival and you have the, oh my goodness, I can't remember it now, but it's a big to do the tattoo. That's it. You've got the big tattoo that's up at the castle, at the Edinburgh Castle. So you've got swarms of people. And as a performer, you've got to break through that noise to get butts in seats. And so there's a lot of work to do on top of doing your show for 28 days straight. So it was pretty brutal, and in terms of demanding your attention, high attention for extended periods of time, things that I don't do naturally necessarily, especially when it comes to some of the more menial marketing and accounting tasks that are not my strong suit. So yeah, the short acting medication got me through the fringe, but once I got back, I was like, it actually was causing a lot of frustration because I was having to really carefully watch my time, because you've got like this 3 to 4 or 5 hour window, depending on how the medication reacts with you. And then you take another dose. And for many people who go into an office, they take it in the morning, maybe with their breakfast, they go to work, they take it at lunch, they finish their work day, they come home. Because that is not my schedule, I was having to sort of negotiate, like, when do I need my periods of really good focus? So that was causing actually even more executive function issues, trying to manage when I was going to take the short acting formula. So we switched to a long acting formula, and I've been through several different providers too, because there's a real big difference in how experienced people are in dealing with adult ADHD. And especially as someone who was diagnosed late in life, and many of the accompanying mental health challenges that a lot of people have because things weren't addressed or diagnosed, you didn't necessarily know how to cope with or understand why things were happening the way they were in your head. I have found that some of the medication management providers are just not as skilled in working on titrating up and down and changing different, you know, some practices are more reticent to change your medication or to change your levels of medication. So it's just really hard to find even, I mean, I feel fortunate that I am somewhere where I'm getting treatment and that I do have access to that medication, because I know just getting in and getting the diagnosis can be difficult. But then finding that right balance is also tough. And it's especially tough when you feel like you're not working with someone who's really listening or engaging with your particulars. So now I'm on the long-acting Adderall, but sporadically, quite frankly.
Well, and the other thing I find with medication too, because I've tried a bunch of different ones and I've tried different titrations and like finally settled on the, you know, a dosage of Vyvanse, and now you can't get it anywhere. And I'm like, fuck, like, I'm just like so frustrated because it's like, maybe I should just go back to not even trying because I finally was on something that was working well and I was happy with, and now I can't get it. And like, it's just, I'm hoping this is validating for people listening to how frustrating this is, because it's like, one of the things that I also find really frustrating about finding the right medication is that, like, some days I'm in the zone, right? Like, I don't know when I'm going to have a low executive function day and when I'm not. I probably could pay a lot more attention to my cycle, or which is up in the air because of perimenopause. So I don't even know what my cycle is anymore. So it's like, there's all of these factors that are at play, but I'm like, I never know when it's working or what it's doing or how well it's working. Like, there's just too many factors to pay attention to for people who struggle with paying attention, right? So it's like, I could probably go on for the rest of my days about the difficulty in ADHD medication. And when people just make it seem like the very early in the podcast, when I was first diagnosed, I was always asking people, like, what does that mean? You say it's working. What does that even mean? Like, how do I know it's working?
Yeah.
Right. I'm really, really needing some kind of, like, I don't know, like a light to go off or something, because I'm sort of, I feel that way now. I felt like in a way where I'm like, oh yes, the tasks I set out to do, I did today. And there's a reliability there to having it long-term, but I can't have it long-term because I'm like rationing it now. And anyway.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Okay. So I also have a soupçon of diagnoses before I finally landed on ADHD. But when you were diagnosed with ADHD, what were some of those things that came up for you where you were like, oh, yeah, okay, the signs were there all along?
Yeah. Well, going back to the audio processing, when I was in second grade, you know, it's weird, those moments in your life that are just crystal clear, like a movie in your mind. There are so many things that happened in my childhood. I couldn't tell you like what exact year it was necessarily. But there are a handful of moments like, oh no, I know it was this, because I remember it was Miss O'Neill's class that mom came and got me out of. How I remembered this one thing, because I also like stopped and like pushed my, the little skin bits at the bottom of your nail.
The cuticle?
Thank you, the cuticle.
This is such ADHD. Everything about this interview, from the 10 minutes it took me to finally realize I was in the wrong studio to everything, I'm loving it. I feel like this is ADHD real time. Yes.
Okay. So yes, for some reason, I stopped and like pushed one of my cuticles down before, like I got up my backpack and everything, stopped and fixed that real fast before I left to go meet my mom at the office to go get my hearing checked, because she was worried that I had hearing issues because I was not responding to her. We go to the doctor, the doctor checks my hearing, and I don't remember this, but mom tells me the story that he comes back into the room chuckling. It's like, oh, she has what we call selective hearing. But that didn't arise as something to investigate any further. It's just, oh yeah, she's just like focused on what she's doing, and you might have to go like tap her on the shoulder or something. So there's that sort of early auditory processing sign that clearly focusing, either hyper-focusing or not knowing where to focus. I've always hated restaurants with a lot of TVs because I just can't focus on the person in front of me. It's all of that visual stuff, but especially if it's noisy, if the TVs are on or something. I love the earbuds that they have now. Loop is one of the brands, but I've got an off-brand and I've got some Loops where you can just kind of put them in and sort of turn the volume down on some of those. I went to a restaurant not too long ago. It was the first time I had been to a really noisy restaurant since I got them. And I put them in, and it was just, my brain was so much calmer that whole time because I was able to turn the volume down on all of that background noise. And I was able to focus on the people around me. I wasn't as exhausted when I left the restaurant as I normally am. So knowing now that that's part of the ADHD brain, it's like, oh, no wonder I find some of those places or events exhausting. Of course I do. My brain is on absolute overload. But it's funny, in the diagnosis process and in the various other surveys I've done as I've changed providers to try to find somebody who will work with me on finding medication, I've had to answer a lot of different questions a lot of different ways. And a couple of times people have mentioned things about wishing they had more evidence from earlier in my childhood. And the story I always pull out for that is, well, I was having a hard time getting up and ready to go to school on time. And so my mom made a poster and it had Snoopy on it. Again, why I remember that little detail, I don't know. Probably because it hung in my room for years and I looked at it every day. But it was a list of like five things. It was like, you know, wake up, make your bed, get dressed, brush your teeth, eat breakfast, pick up your backpack or something like that. Like, just these are the steps you need to do from when you wake up until we walk out the door for school. It was like 5 steps. And I look back on that now, it's like, oh, well, that was an adaptation that we were making, not realizing what was really behind it. And so consequently, I've also been able to look back and see other adaptations I've made along the way. Now, that process has also come along with a lot of shame, and, you know, OCD is one of the scattering of letters that that's on my chart, and how much of that is because of the various, you know, checking, because I know my tendency to be late or to overlook things, the number of times I couldn't find keys, and that's what was making me run late. And so now I have a very specific place. I walk in the door and there is a hook. And so when they're asking questions about, do you constantly lose things? It's like, well, not anymore, because at this point in my life, I've figured out a way not to lose my keys every other day. But how long did I go, you know, losing my keys every other day? I don't know, many years. How many times was my car towed when I was in school in Cincinnati because I was parked on the wrong side of the street too late in the morning? And my car was towed so many times in Cincinnati, but lots of tickets and tows and locking my keys in my car. Sometimes one time, distressingly, with my dogs in the car. So it was, you know, a lot of those things that I just chalked up to being lazy, forgetful, spacey, or, you know, fill in the blank. And so with that comes a lot of shame and developing these systems that, I don't want to say gave me OCD, but, you know, it's kind of manifest in this sort of obsessive compulsive manner of addressing certain things, like locking the doors.
Yeah.
Because I came home one day and the door was just wide open. I had apparently forgotten to just close the door.
Oh, I've done that. I left the car doors wide open one night, all night long. And I had to like check to make sure there wasn't a family of raccoons living in our car now.
I'm glad it didn't rain.
But I feel like you're right. I feel like the diagnosis for a lot of us, because anxiety is such a, you know, common bedfellow for those of us with ADHD, that it's like, rather than asking if you lose your keys, ask how elaborate is your system for remembering things, and how reliant are you on systems in general, I think says a lot more about neurodivergent thinking. My son the other day, he's 13, and I was like, this is the perfect example of ADHD and anxiety. So because both my kids have ADHD, but he was, you know, he was asking when his NISMA, which is in New York, I don't remember what it stands for, but it's like the musical, it's sort of like conservatory, like you every year you go and you get tested and they give you a mark.
Yeah.
It's, I don't remember what it stands for, but I think it's like statewide. And so anyway, it's coming up and he was like, oh, what is NISMA? I got to know what NISMA is. And I'm like, it's on this day in the calendar. And he was like, are you sure? And I was like, well, I don't know. Am I sure? So I had to look it up on the calendar and show him on my phone. I was like, yeah, it's right here in the calendar. And he was like, are you sure you wrote it down right? And I was like, I don't know if I wrote it down. Maybe I didn't write it down right. He was like, you should check the email from the music teacher. And I was like, okay. So I was like, I don't know if I did it wrong. So I checked the email from the music teacher and I was like, nope, we got it right. The email from the music teacher says it's this date. And he was like, well, what if the music teacher got it wrong? Oh, no. And I was like, this is such a perfect example of that like endless anxiety that comes with a lack of self-trust around memory and ability to function, right? And I'm like, this is how our self-trust breaks down over the course of our life, so that we have this like constant, what if, what if, what if? Am I getting this wrong? Am I getting this wrong? Maybe you're getting it wrong. And like, we just are so unmoored so much of the time. And I was like, God, I'm so sorry, you poor little 13-year-old, that you carry this with you. But I don't know what made me think of that. I think it was the keys and just that idea, or no, talking about the system from childhood, right? Which is like, a lot of the time those structures are super helpful for us, but I think they also, you know, that we don't get a chance to establish self-trust around being capable with memory and, you know, an executive functioning, or maybe we never had it to begin with. Maybe I shouldn't say that we were being our parents were enablers if they made those lists for us, but I do think there's like a fine balance between figuring out strategies and then having them given to you, and why so many of us fall apart when we go away to college or adulthood, because it's like we had our parents propping us up so much.
Or the thing I'm running into now. So my son is 17 and he's finishing up his junior year in high school as we're speaking, but he does not live at home. He goes to, there are a handful of these schools. I don't know exactly how many. I know there's two in Kentucky, and I know that there are others in the country where there is a public high school option at a college campus. And so it's a STEM focused academy, and he goes to school. He lives on a college campus in a particular dorm that's all of these kids with this academy. So he lives there on campus, which is about 2 hours away. He attends college classes, but they count towards his high school degree. And then they have a couple of other things they have to do because they're high school kids and not college kids. So he's not completely got free rein there, and he's got curfews and some other things. But regardless, I never realized until after he was out of the house how much the structure of his school day was helping keep my day structured, because it was so frustrating, because my sweet spot for my brain is really like 3 to 7 is when I really like gear up and get creative and have a lot of energy. And that is pick up from school time, get dinner ready, you know, drive to karate, all of the, you know, help on homework, all of those things. And it was so frustrating because I would feel so sluggish until it was time to go pick him up. And then I'm having all of this like creative energy and urge to work on stuff that I couldn't get myself to work, make forward progress on during his school day. But I'm having to like sit down and help him with his homework and that sort of thing. Well, now I realize with this diagnosis, and he also has ADHD, which my story is a little bit reverse. I'm the one that got diagnosed. And then as I'm sharing with him, oh my gosh, you know how I always do this? That's ADHD. So one day he's like, Mom, I think I might have ADHD, because a lot of these things you're saying make so much sense. So we got him tested and he also has ADHD. So now I realize some of those times where he was needing me to sit down with him doing his homework, that was body doubling. We wouldn't have called it that because we didn't know. And likewise, having him around the house was kind of like body doubling for me. So with him going away, that structure is not there. And so this year has been really interesting to figure out what I need to build around myself to pull it all together and make things happen. And it's been a struggle. But the upside of that is at least I have this frame of, I have a neurodivergent brain. I am not a bad person. I am not lazy. I am not, you know, fill in the blank of all of these negative connotation words that I certainly have used during my entire life. Now it's like, oh, no, this is just my brain doesn't operate the way, you know, regular people, in quotes, think about organizing things. And so I've got to figure out what system is going to work for me to keep that structure to my day. So that's been a roller coaster ride to figure out.
It is. And I think people are lying if they say this isn't frustrating. I said that the other day, you know, I was like, if you could wave a magic wand and say that I didn't have ADHD, would I not have ADHD? And I've gone back and forth. There's certain sometimes where I'm like, this is the greatest thing, you know, especially after I was diagnosed, it felt so nice, you know, to be kinder to myself and to have an explanation for so much in the beginning. But then there's other times where I'm like, I still have ADHD. Like, there's still really frustrating to have to find these workarounds and to not have the executive functioning on the days I wanted. And just to feel like there's so many hoops that I have to go through to convince myself to do the silliest little mundane things. And so I'm like, I don't know, I can't ever decide. Speaking of being kinder to ourselves and how you were sort of saying that, it is very refreshing to say, this is my brain and not me being so lazy. Like, are there things that you would look now and say, oh yeah, I appreciate my ADHD for this or that?
Certainly being good in a crisis. There are several times where that has come in handy. It's funny, the two that really pop into my mind both center around my father. One was an injury, and one was he got COVID that got really bad and then ultimately passed away from it. But in those two particular situations, the whole field just narrowed down, and I sort of really focused on, we need to do X, we need to do Y, we need to do Z, we need to make this phone call, let's get this packed up or whatever. Like all of the chatter, all of the background noise just went away. And certainly there have been times where being able to focus in a crisis has been good. But even for my career, I mean, being on stage, you're sort of up on a high wire, you and the cast, and the audience is really the not spoken about other member of the cast, because who knows what's going to happen when you go out live in front of an audience. And so having a brain that functions well with that sort of uncertainty and knowing that, like, this is the job we have to do. So while doing a play is not a crisis, my brain sort of naturally works in a way that is conducive to the skills that I need to be able to perform live in front of an audience and not have any issues around that. Yeah, I don't really get stage fright or anything like that, except for the first show. The first audience is always a little nerve-wracking, like, how are they going to respond? What's going to happen? How's this dance going to go? Once you get out there, you're so rehearsed. And that's where, again, that's, you know, you're really rehearsed and you're focused on this thing that you and your cast have been rehearsing. But then you have this whole other element that you don't know exactly how it's going to go. But the ADHD brain seems to work really well with that not knowing and that dichotomy of this very planned thing and this very unplanned thing coexisting in the same space. So that's been really good.
Hey friend, if there's one thing I've learned about ADHD over the last few years is that we can thrive with the right combination of accountability, planning, coaching, and peer support. Knowing all this, I set out to create the ultimate all-in-one coaching and accountability community for adults with ADHD or learning disabilities. I knew I couldn't do it alone, so I joined forces with one of my favorite ADHD coaches, Alex Gilbert of Capable Consulting, and together we launched the ADHD Lounge. The Lounge was created as a safe place for neurodivergent adults away from other social media, where we offer live group calls, co-working, and body doubling every weekday for accountability, focus, and skill development. We have weekly and monthly goal planning sessions to keep yourself on track. We also have one-on-one office hours with myself and Alex, and of course, friendship and lots of peer support. We have three different membership levels to meet you where you're at. So if you're looking for an affordable way to stay connected, productive, and accountable, while also having regular access to ADHD coaching and expertise, then make sure to come join me in the ADHDlounge.com. Again, that's the ADHDlounge.com. And as a listener of the Women in ADHD podcast, you can get 30% off your first month with the code PODCAST30. So head to the ADHDlounge.com and use the code PODCAST30 to get 30% off your first month. During the early days of my diagnosis, as I was deep into hyperfocus ADHD research mode, I kept searching for some kind of all-in-one, everything you ever needed to know about ADHD in women handbook that I could reference and keep at my fingertips, but I never really found anything that suited me. That's why I've taken everything I've learned about ADHD in women and adults who are socialized as girls, and I've gathered it into a concise, easy-to-access, self-guided, and self-paced course so you can feel like you've got everything you need at your fingertips. It's called Hey, It's ADHD, and it has everything you need to start loving your brain and living a more fulfilling, gratifying life. I built this course to be helpful wherever you are on your ADHD journey. I am so excited to finally be able to offer this course, and I truly hope this will help you develop a deeper understanding of your ADHD brain and how to embrace it as you build yourself a toolkit for your own life. So head over to womenandadhd.com and click on the Hey, It's ADHD course tab for more information and to get started.
I've had a couple actors on the podcast over the years, and it is very interesting to think about how ADHD really enhances performing from, oh, well, we've been masking our whole lives. We're expert performers.
Yeah.
But also, like you said, like that ability to really focus in. I like how you articulated that. And also the interesting thing about like just memorizing lines, I think it's so oxymoronic. Is that the word I'm looking for? Where it's like, you know, for so many of us who struggle with working memory, memorizing lines is one of those things that just like falls. It's like, it just exists, right? There's this part of your brain, this other foyer that you just kind of get on stage and you open your mouth and out it comes. And
yep. I mean, I have been on stage where I get this like panic because suddenly I can't think about, like, my brain is like, I can't remember what I'm supposed to say, blah, not like next, but like next or whatever. And then we get there and then it just happens.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there it is. Okay. We're good. It's all good. That's what rehearsal was for.
I know. I feel like it's all part of the same hemisphere of the brain, that like autopilot. But anyway, maybe not. I'm not a neuroscientist, but I think what I'm saying is very sound.
I think I sound excellent. My opinions are perfect.
So do you have mentioned that you think maybe your husband has it, which is another parallel too, because I'm always talking about how I have no idea if my husband has it or not, because I'm like, he struggles with a lot of the same things with executive functioning, but he has like, he's never had to take care of the children's calendar, like the social calendar, mm-hmm. right? And so he's always had a secretary and he's, you know, like all those ways in which I'm like, yeah. In fact, when he started working from home during the pandemic and was taking on a lot more of the like domestic duties around the kids. So suddenly it was like, for the first time in years, we were sharing who took the kids to the dentist and who did this and who was in charge of this. He was doing a lot more of those things that I had always taken on for years and years and years. And he like was the poster child for ADHD. He couldn't remember anything. He was always late. He was so frustrated. And I was, so I'm curious how that conversation's been around your husband. Is he neurocurious?
Yeah, neurospicy.
Well, because mine is like, absolutely not. I don't have it. He refuses to think he has it. And then I'm like, well, that's an interesting statement on how you feel about me.
No, and Andrew absolutely affirms that in all likelihood he has ADHD. But for some reason, he just has no interest in doing anything about it. So whatever. His biggest thing with time, you mentioned your husband's always late. Mine is always so freaking early. So, you know, if we're not leaving 10 minutes before the time we decided that we would leave, he's, you know, pacing up and down the hallway. And we have finally sort of come to an understanding of like, you need to tell me when you actually want to leave. And if you're ready to go and I'm not ready to go, and it's not yet the time that we agreed to leave, you may not stand in the hallway sighing loudly while you look at your watch. Because it's not the time we haven't yet reached that time. Now, once we reach that time and surpass it, which happens often, then you're allowed to look at your watch and sigh. But yeah, that's definitely been a tension in the relationship of, you know, I have a tendency to push things and not understand that 5 minutes is only 5 minutes as real people experience it, not the way my brain experiences it. I don't actually have time to like vacuum the house.
You've referred to people as normal and now real.
Which I do tongue in cheek. I hope people understand. It's not, yeah.
No, I know.
But like, you know, I don't have time to vacuum the house or mow the yard or whatever in 5 minutes. It's going to take me more than 5 minutes to get a shower. Whereas he wants to leave in time for like everything to happen. And then also arrive like 30 minutes early. So that's been the cause of most friction, is our different approaches to our time blindness. But then the other thing is just he's got a much more, mine is more attentive, inattentive ADHD, where all of that busyness and hyperactivity is turned inward, whereas his is much more outward. So he's always doodling and tapping his leg or tapping his fingers or some sort of fidgety something or other. But again, you know, he's at this point, he's a grown-ass man and he's developed his accommodations, and so he's fine with it. But no, he does not deny that in all likelihood he is ADHD positive.
Right. Adjacent. Yeah, no, I know. It's very similar experience. Actually, my husband is not late all the time. I don't know why I said that. He's actually pretty much the same. And, you know, he always likes to be early. And he and I both are the kind of people who show up at the airport like 5 hours early because we never know what's going to happen. But he is one of those people who cannot stand still. And he'll get 10,000 steps before noon on his Fitbit just by being on the phone. He paces madly on the phone and he does not sit still.
Yes.
And I'm always like, there's part of me that's so jealous because I'm like, I ended up with the inattentive, you know, even though I'm officially combined, but like I'm the kind of person who will just lie paralyzed on the couch all day. And I'm like, I wish I had your brand of nonstop ADHD.
I wonder how much of that is also because being socialized as a woman, being expected to sit still and sort of, all of the things that are surround that sort of stereotypical good girl type, you know, how much of it is that we were just trained to be expected to sit still and be quiet and not have the energy going outward. And so, whereas the boys tend to be allowed more, or at least they did, you know, that things are really all that different necessarily in school and that sort of thing. But yeah, there is sort of that different way of being socialized. And I wonder how much of that plays into women generally presenting with a more inattentive or combined type, as opposed to that energy going out with the tapping and all of the stuff.
Right. I always sort of likened it to the fact that just the sheer exhaustion that exists with ADHD a lot of the time. And then, you know, and always being like, well, where's that coming from? Because I have felt exhausted my whole life. And so it's, you know, or basically, maybe it's basically since having kids. I don't really remember much about life before kids, but that was definitely like, I have been tired since the day I gave birth and it's never stopped. And so it's like, a lot of the time I feel like that exhaustion comes from that internal hamster wheel and the masking and all of that stuff. And, you know, learning more about, like you said, that socialized way in which we need to kind of stay together and pretend that we're listening and be really focused. And all of that takes so much effort so that we are kind of always exhausted behind the scenes. And so like when I'm lying down, it's much more of a like, you know, the woman with the needing smelling salts on the chaise lounge. Like that's like, for me, I'm like always looking for a reason to rest because I'm chronically exhausted. And that's where I feel like I've never like, I would probably benefit from walking around all day and doing what he does. But I'm just like mentally, I'm always looking for another reason to lie down. Which, you know, any personal trainer will tell you that's only going to make you more tired, or, you know, at least the negative voices in my head are telling me that. But I think it does come from the sheer exhaustion that comes from just existing. You're like, you felt that, right? Or it's like,
oh, yes,
just having to like keep it all together in a way that we have for so long. Like I don't know what it's like to not feel exhausted. That's why I think I'm always lying around, but who knows?
So I got COVID in 2020, in summer of 2020, and have long COVID. And that's manifested basically in like fibromyalgia, autoimmune stuff. And so I've got physical stuff going on with the fatigue, in addition to the ADHD fatigue, like brain fatigue, which also, you know, makes you physically tired as well. Just because your brain's tired doesn't mean you're not physically tired, but the recovery is different from mental fatigue. If I'm feeling overwhelmed mentally and it's a good body day, like a relatively pain-free day and that sort of thing, I can rest mentally and then feel recharged in a little bit. Whereas if it's a day where it's more from the autoimmune stuff that's keeping me from feeling able to move through and feeling energetic, then there's not really any way to recover until you just, you know, hope that the next day is better. But it is helpful to know, like yesterday at a doctor's appointment, it was a really long doctor's appointment. And by the time I was done, because I had spent over an hour like super focused, it was that mental exhaustion that I just got home and I was like, I'm hungry, but I have no idea what to eat. I mean, there's plenty of food at the house and even some things that are easy to just like grab real quick. But I was like, I don't even know where to start. So I had to lay down and just get myself some time to rest. And then I was able to figure out, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, make this and move on with the rest of my day. But yeah, it's that mental fatigue is a real struggle, not helped by the fact that perimenopause also messes with your energy. And so it's a whole jumble of interesting chemical reactions that are happening and just working our way through it.
I think that's also where kids play a lot. You know, you were talking about your son leaving home. Like for me, if I'm home alone, my dinner consists of a bag of popcorn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I cannot cook for myself. And so I'm always grateful for the fact that I have to, if usually my husband cooks, but like if it's up to me, I'm like, I have to feed these people, these humans that I brought into the world. It's the least I can do. But for myself, never.
Yeah, I spent, you know, 16 years being I'm generally the primary cook. But then, yeah, as soon as Flynn left, it's like, well, I don't know. I'm just going to pop some popcorn and make a smoothie, you know. I think that'll be fine.
I know. I'm like, cheese on hand sandwich. That's my favorite. Well, it's interesting that you brought up the autoimmune stuff too, because obviously so much correlation and comorbidity with autoimmune disorders and neurodivergence. And I have Meniere's disease too, which is not necessarily as much pain as it is just low level nausea and vertigo. So
super fine.
And tinnitus too. That's the other thing. I know I lost hearing in my left ear, so I have very loud tinnitus all the time.
That's also exhausting.
It's awful. It's terrible. It's like, you know, trigger warning, but like there is a high association between tinnitus, however you want to call it, and suicide. And I was like, well, that's great.
Swell.
But when you were talking about restaurants, and I was thinking about like how frustrating it is to be in restaurants with a hearing aid, now that I have a hearing aid, because hearing aids like amplify really weird random sounds. They're terrible for loud ambient environments. And like, I hate restaurants more now than I ever did before, because it's like, you know, especially when you're in those like little urban restaurants where it's like all the tables are right next to each other. So you have no choice but to listen to the couple next to you, you know, have a fight over their meals. And I'm like, ooh, this is so interesting. But yeah, I was thinking about how like I've had to relearn how to live with a hearing aid because of this. I don't know. What was I talking about? Oh, we were talking about autoimmune and all of this stuff with stress and the nervous system and why all of us have autoimmune disorders. I feel like that person with all the red string on the wall, just being like, it's all connected.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And actually, my son is really interested in going into psychology. And so it's fun to listen to him sort of connect some of the dots. But yeah, I'm super interested in how all of that is connected. And I feel like at some point in the future, there's probably going to be some sort of discovery that there is some overlap, because living with an overloaded brain can't help but impact the rest of the system that the brain is attached to. So yes, I feel like there are some discoveries to be made there, and whether it'll happen in my lifetime, I'm not banking on it. But yeah, I do think that sort of mind-body connection stuff is really interesting.
I know. Yeah, same. But it's kind of like hormones and menopause. I'm like, I'm equally as fascinated as I am frustrated anytime I do any deep dives, because I'm like, there's too many question marks. Nobody has any idea what's happening.
And, you know, it's not like perimenopause or menopause is a new thing to the human condition. It's just remarkable. The body that can reproduce has been so overlooked in the medical field.
Well, all right. Well, we just got our own checking accounts one generation ago, so take it down a notch, lady. One thing at a time.
Stay in your place. Just in the kitchen.
So have you ever thought of a name that you might have for ADHD that is less complicated or horrible? Have you ever heard of one, or did you ever come up with one?
No, it's funny because last night, the thing that my brain was spiraling on and not allowing me to sleep about was thinking about different words that it could be acronyms for. And so it was like, I should write these down. No, I'll remember them tomorrow.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so relatable. I'm sorry. I apologize. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And I was trying to think of what some of them were. And I remember there was like, all details, hurry, do it. It's like, but you have to hyphenate do it. You know, it's just like, that's not really. And then I Google at night, lying in bed, I roll over, pick up my phone and Google psychology terms that start with A, because I was like, let's try to make this sound more official. Yeah, I didn't come up with anything. It's like, oh, activating is a good one. It, you know, came up with random ones. But what's so funny is I have a game I play with myself on long car rides. I just get to the point where I'm not really seeing anything anymore because I've been on the road for so long, where I'll start coming up with the license plates. I'll come up with funny sayings. And I started doing that last night with ADHD, but now of course I can't remember any of them. None of them were particularly that good. They were entertaining me at 2 o'clock in the morning, but I don't think it's really worth publishing.
Well, that's enough for me. I'm just glad to know. If anything pops up at an inopportune random time, let me know and I'll add it into the show notes.
Will do. Will do.
I haven't come up with anything. So I'm like, you know, because I'm always like, what would have put that light bulb on for me before my diagnosis, right? Because it's like, you know, we're always talking about executive dysfunction and all these things where I'm like, that none of that, I wouldn't have related to any of that. And like you said, like my therapist recommended ADHD, you know, suggested ADHD to me gently over the years. And I always took it vaguely as an insult, which is like, what do you think of me that you think I have ADHD? And so, you know, again, it's like, what would have made me say, oh, that explains me. In a way that is also a pathologized, you know, disorder.
Yeah. But so much of it, I feel like I am glad for it because, it has just helped me reframe so many things in my past and in my present so that there isn't the shame spiral and some of these other things that I had to become very accustomed to and very good at doing. So I'm not too bothered by it. Of course, I'm saying that now 2 years later. When I got to Edinburgh, they have a big press event towards the beginning of the Fringe. And there is a publication there that was doing interviews called the Neurodivergent Review, I think it was. And I was, you know, pretty freshly diagnosed. And I was like, ooh, do I really want to identify as a neurodivergent performer? And opted not pitch to them at that particular event. Now, later in the month, it was really interesting to see the difference in the cultural acceptance of neurodivergence at least in the British theater community that I was part of during the Fringe. Anyway, it just seemed to be more accepted, more embraced, and that was really helpful for me. Also, being someone who was newly diagnosed, is seeing people really own that label of neurodivergent and using that as sort of an advantage to them or, you know, something that was a unique selling proposition, you might say, to their company or their piece or what have you. And so that was really helpful at that particular time of my life and in particular. And I think because of that too, I came back to the States and ended up adding neurodivergent to my website and on one of my about me pages, it sounds like, why would you have more than one? Because I have like a general bio, you know, because you land on my website and it's like, I'm an actor and I'm a writer. And so basically there are different things like, here's some things I've done as a writer. And so there's a little bit of additional information, you know, sort of a slightly different bio on that page that talks about me more as a writer. It's anyway, yeah. But yeah, just learning to embrace that label. And I guess I find myself using neurodivergent more than ADHD.
I do too, simply because I'm like, do I have autism? I don't know. Maybe I do. Do it. Like, I'm more confused than anyone after doing this, talking about it nonstop for 4 years. So I'm like, I think there's a lot more happening here. And then the other thing I feel like a lot of the time I feel like the ADHD for me, it's like, that's the part where you're struggling, right? You know, that's the behaviors that exist as a result of your brain not being in a regulated state or being in an environment that is helpful to you. So I'm like, at the end of the day, I feel like we're talking about a neurodivergent brain. And when you're in crisis mode or, you know, things that happen as a result of your brain are the ADHD. So there's times where I'm like, hella ADHD, and other times where I'm like, yeah, but, you know, I'm doing well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's where I'm like, yeah, I feel like neurodivergent feels like more of a constant state for me than ADHD. But I don't know. What do I know?
You know your own experience. And I would affirm that experience that I think that what you just explained sounds very similar to, yeah, I identify with that, I would say.
Right. Well, there we go. It's official. So since you aren't very Googleable, where would people be able to find you? I know that you have the Swamp Witch Studio, which we actually didn't get to talk about much, but where can people find you and find more about you?
People are going to be like, wait, Swamp Witch Studio, what?
I know, right? I'm like, I really just threw that in at the end there.
That's the name under which I do my audio production stuff. And so I have done podcasts through Swamp Witch Studio. Initially, that was the name of my first podcast. And so I sort of just adjusted it over the years to sort of be the umbrella under which I do certain types of jobs. Whereas then I also have like basic freelancing actor, writer, that's not under that umbrella. So it's because I am working on getting the Swamp Witch Studio work sort of peeled off and under its own LLC and that sort of thing, working in that direction of making it a more official business as opposed to, yeah, I do this stuff and you know, you've got to have a podcast name. And so started Swamp Witch Studio, which is a whole other story. But yeah, so swampwitchstudio.com, which is where you could find information about podcasts and other projects that are being done there, primarily audio focused. I'm very excited, actually. So there's not been a lot of work going on under the Swamp Witch Studio umbrella since returning from Edinburgh, because I came back with an injury that has taken quite a while to deal with. And so now that that is resolving and moving forward, working on getting that sort of more organized, I was really haphazard about it in the past. So swampwitchstudio.com, you can find more details. But I'm excited because I'll be going back to the UK for graduate school next year. Woohoo! I found a master's in audio storytelling at University College London. So yeah, that's a very recent development, like past couple of days that got confirmed. So very excited to get underway with that. And I could talk about that for much longer because I'm very excited. Yeah, so swampwitchstudio.com. And also, This Moment in America is the name of the project that I took to Edinburgh. And the whole point of that is basically, after Trump was elected, we heard a lot in the media about people struggling to understand why people were voting for him, and living in the middle of the country, being a native Appalachian, native Southerner, the conversations that would have involved why someone might vote for Trump were not outside the realm of my experience. And so I was not as confused as it seemed like a lot of the talk we were hearing in national media was struggling to understand. And so it all sort of started from there, trying to look at, okay, how can I as a theater artist provide a platform where we can talk to each other a little bit more, understand this a little bit more? And it's manifested in This Moment in America, which is basically a one-person show, multimedia show. So it's live, it's also recorded, it's video, audio, lots of different elements. And that's been also part of the hiatus, has been sort of reconceiving, taking the experiences I learned from Fringe and reconceiving what needs to change to improve the show and figuring out how that's going to work.
And who knows, maybe there's a sequel.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the whole idea, though, is that it's an ongoing, ever-evolving thing that's responding, almost like a conversation with news media, but the, not the media itself, but the news and what's going on in sort of our national conversations. And then interspersing, basically, information about current events with average American, not that there is such a thing, but sort of your different responses based on the lived experiences, because that's ultimately what we're all coming into the voting booth with, or coming to our own opinions about, is our, based on our variety of lived experiences, which are going to be so different based on where we are in the country, based on all of these different factors that are going to be so different for a country as big as ours. So yeah, the thismomentinamerica.org, which I am actually needing to get updated to reflect that it's no longer playing at the Edinburgh Fringe 2 years later. But again, it's been on hiatus. So, but thismomentinamerica.org, where you can find out more information about what that's going to be as it's becoming. So yeah, it'll be live shows and opportunities also to do writing workshops and that sort of thing. That was really a lot of words to talk about where people can find me, but
no, that's really fascinating. So This Moment in America is not, it's not, a, there's not a recorded version of the performance that we can watch online, right?
Not right okay. now, because, right. Yeah, I thought I was recording all of my performances at Edinburgh to then release on the podcast. I do have recordings, but they are not straight from the board. They're just basically the what was being heard in the house. They're not the quality to release. So I learned the hard way that I spent 28 performances hooking up my system wrong.
Oh,
yeah. So currently there is nothing really, but I, my goal is that by next month, I'm doing sort of regular updates and releasing regular recordings. So the part of the reconceiving of it is an online engagement opportunity, whereas before it was conceived very much as just like a live in-person situation. So I learned a lot of things at the Fringe, and it's taken a little while to collate all of that into usable information that my brain can then process into an actionable plan for moving forward.
Wow. Well, congratulations on the master's, because I know that last I heard from you, you had been accepted, but we're sort of trying to figure out how to get there. So that's awesome. Well, congratulations. What an exciting new chapter. Thank you so much. It's been absolute joy chatting with you, Claire, and getting to hear more about your story.
Likewise. It's been lovely chatting with you. I love the podcast, actually. I am a regular listener, so thank you for the work that you're doing. And it's been such an honor to be a part of it. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
There you have it. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Women and ADHD Podcast. If you'd like to find out more about me and my coaching programs, head over to womenandadhd.com. If you're a woman who was diagnosed with ADHD and you'd like to apply to be a guest on this podcast, visit womenandadhd.com/podcast guest, and you can find that link in the episode show notes. Also, you know we ADHDers crave feedback, and I would really appreciate hearing from you, the listener. Please take a moment to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Audible. And if that feels like too much, and I totally get it, please just take a few seconds right now to give me a 5-star rating. Or share this episode on your own social media to help reach more women who maybe have yet to discover and lean into this gift of neurodivergency. And they may be struggling and they don't even know why. I'll see you next week when I interview another amazing woman who discovered she's not lazy or crazy or broken, but she has ADHD. And she's now on the path to understanding her neurodivergent mind and finally using this gift to her advantage. Take care till then.